Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Saturday Mornings with Joy Keyes. I'm your host, Joy Keyes. I want to thank you for joining me this morning. Today we're going to be talking about women in prison. It's a tough topic, but I think it's something that needs to be discussed. Women are on a rise in incarceration rates. This morning we have a couple special guests. Sarah Fromm, she's the Director of Public Policy and Communications at the Women's Prison Association. Good morning, Sarah.
Good morning. Great to be here.
Thank you. We also have Maureen Buell. She's a Correctional Program Specialist with the National Institute of Corrections. Good morning, Maureen.
Good morning. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you for coming on. And last but not least, we have Alfreda Robinson. She's the founder of the National Women's Prison Project. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming on, all of you. For the listeners, if you have a question, please press the number 1 on your phone. That will let me know that you do have a question or comment related to the show. And also, just to let you know, you can listen on your computer. If for some reason your phone messes up, you can log on to www.blogtalkradio.com/Joy Keyes and listen on your computer. And you can do this from anywhere in the country. This morning, again, we're talking about women in prison, and the statistics are a little gloomy here. As of December 31st, 2001, based on the Bureau of Justice Statistics, there are estimated 5.6 million adults who have served time in state or federal prison. In terms of females, black females have a higher rate of imprisonment than Hispanic females, and then third is white females. Nearly two-thirds of the 3.8 million increase in the number of adults ever incarcerated between 1974 and 2001 occurred as a result of increase in their first incarceration, meaning they were already in prison and then they got in trouble again and probably had a harsher sentence. The issue today is women in prison. Women are 6.6% of the state prison inmates. That's as of 2001, and I know it's increased since then. And why are women going to prison more? I mean, is that a fact or is that fiction? From my readings, I understand the issue of drugs, domestic violence, embezzlement. I would like to ask this of Sarah. Sarah, what are you seeing in terms of why women are going to prison more? Or are they going more? Is this a statistical lie? What is your opinion about that?
It's very much the truth that more women are going to prison than ever before. I mean, just to put it kind of in historical context, in 1977, there were 11,000 women in prison across the United States total. By 2004, there were 11,000 women in prison in Texas alone. So we've seen a dramatic increase in the number of women in prison. You know, now there are over 200,000 women in prison and jail in the United States. When you look at the number of women who are under some form of correctional supervision, meaning that they're in prison, jail, probation, or parole, that number rises to over 1 million. So it is very much the case that there are more women in prison now than ever before.
And why do you think they're going to prison now? Is the issue of drugs and domestic violence high on the list?
I mean, yes, you know, the war on drugs is a huge part of why we've seen this increase. You know, when you look at who's, you know, what women in prison are in prison for, two-thirds are in prison for nonviolent crimes and one-third for violent crimes. And within that nonviolent category, one of those thirds is drug crimes and one of those thirds is property crimes, things like theft, things that often trace back to drugs. You know, underlying those crimes is a really complicated mix of poverty and drug use, often childhood trauma, which sometimes precedes the drug use, mental health issues, low levels of education and formal employment, and all of these things contribute to why women go to prison.
Alfreda, I just want to talk to you because I know you have a personal connection with this issue. You want to tell the audience a little bit about your story?
Oh, well, yes. I went to prison for a drug charge actually it was use of a telephone device to threaten, hurt, harm, or kill another individual was what the indictment was actually stating. And what happened there was my son was selling drugs in Baltimore, Maryland, and when I picked up the telephone to call someone who owed him money, I was called a conspirator trying to collect a drug debt. I had a job, went to work every day, and certainly I thought, you know, with this indictment, I'd go to court and I'd certainly be cleared because there was no record of me selling drugs, being around it, or anything else. It was simply that telephone call. However, upon time that we did go to trial in 1992, my son David was sentenced to 45 years for his part in being a distributor of drugs. His co-defendant was given 30 years, and I was given 121 months, which was 10 years, for using that telephone device. While my attorney argued that the phone is the guilty party, take the phone or give her an aiding and abetting charge, which would have been 2 years, I was found guilty of, and under the mandatory minimum sentencing guidelines, 121 months is what I was sentenced to. And after doing 9 years and 6 months, actually, and then 4 more months in the halfway house in Baltimore, and 5 years of probation, I've been home now for 8 years and have opened and founded the National Women's Prison Project for women who have been in the criminal justice system, have been impacted by it, are home and their records are still affecting their employment, and all of the other issues that are involved with a woman doing time in prison.
Now, what was your experience in prison? What were the women saying? Do they feel that they were fairly sentenced? Were they in prison? I mean, well, I'm sure yes and no, but do you feel that the issues we talked about earlier, a couple of seconds ago, the issues of drugs, domestic violence, nonviolent crimes?
I see it in paper now, but of course the statistics actually are probably underreported. If my opinion, a lot of people are there because of lack of education, because of drug use, substance use, where they're trying to mask the pain that they're actually dealing with because of the trauma, the emotional, psychological things that they've been through that they've not been able to handle. And they end up in prison where if you can get treatment in federal prison, you do have some trauma programs, but in the average prison, trauma is a new term. It's not something that you've heard of. And the largest thing is that most women are the primary caretakers of their children. So when they leave and go to prison, the family is destroyed. Children are all over. Hopefully they can be with one relative, but in most cases they're in foster care, or parents lose complete custody of their children, and it's more difficult to do your time not knowing where your children are. And another thing that we don't talk about a lot is that when people are out here drugging, they're not taking care of their health. And when they go to prison and they actually find out through physicals that, you know, this is wrong, that they're walking around HIV positive or hepatitis C or diabetes and things that, you know, can be treated and taken care of, we're finding that that just adds to the trauma because of the lifestyles they've led. So a lot is discovered, and it's an opportunity for us to really use it as a time to educate and treat women. But I think we're too involved with just the mass incarceration and not taking care of the problems and discovering that women are gender different, that we need to have programming for women that affects the lifestyles, the choices they've made, their pathways to crime. All of that comes into play when we're actually talking about changing behaviors while we
have
inside of the prison.
I want to get Maureen's perspective also, because she deals with the training of the staff. Maureen, from your side of the fence, so to speak, what is your what feedback are you getting from staff who have to deal with women who are in prison?
Well, I think that everything that Alfreda just said is really accurate. And the role that the National Institute of Corrections has taken is that exactly what Alfreda has been saying has been born through the research, through the practical experience, through the women's voices, through litigation and case law, and all of the issues that she names are really issues that are significant within criminal justice. And what we have found is that there are significant differences that impact women, that they do come into the criminal justice system differently oftentimes than men do, that their experiences while within criminal justice, serving their time and on probation and parole, are unique, and that those issues are unique also upon their release. So what we found is that the criminal justice system essentially is a system that has been built for male offenders. We refer to it as gender neutral. And so security practices, treatment options, even the physical plant, how staff interact with the women are all based upon a male model. And what's not taken into consideration is that women are relational, is that they connect and they support each other through relationships, not always positive, but it is a form of support for women, that women bring significant trauma histories, histories of addiction. They come into the criminal justice system differently than their male counterparts. So what we found is that really within criminal justice until very, very recently, we've been really targeting some of the wrong areas for women offenders. We have been over-classifying them, so oftentimes women are held at higher custody levels than their risk warrants. We are focusing on some of the wrong issues or issues that really don't underlie how they entered the system in the first place. So I think that what we're learning through the research, through the practical experiences, through what has occurred in terms of case law and litigation, but I think most importantly, what we're learning is what we're learning from the women. For women like Alfreda and others like her who are speaking up and really talking about how they got into the system, what their experiences are while in the system, and preparing for release. I think that's just critical information for us to have. So we have a lot of work to do within criminal justice in dealing with this population.
Yes, I think that's important. Also, the issue of the sentencing, I was reading an article, this is from the New York Times, it's actually from 2003, Women Find a New Arena for Equality in Prison. Unfortunately, that had a slightly negative tone, but it discusses this one woman's case, said the county jails in Oklahoma are considered so overcrowded and in such poor shape that judges tend to convict women as felons and sentence them to terms of more than 1 year to make sure they get into prison, rather than giving them shorter terms that would send them to a jail. Anybody want to comment on that statement? Have you experienced that, Sarah?
Well, I mean, I think what it points to is that, you know, the United States has really become the world's most ardent incarcerator, and this is not something that we should be proud of. You know, women are a pretty glaring symbol of what is, you know, as Alfreda pointed to, mass incarceration. We simply send too many women to prison. And, you know, for the kinds of things that women are going to prison for, things like drug addiction, are things that are much better addressed in the community. So we need to be investing more resources into community-based alternatives to incarceration rather than prisons. And we also need to be taking a step even farther back from that and looking at how communities are policed, what kind of laws are in place when someone does come into the criminal justice system, so what kind of sentences are they getting. Mandatory minimum sentencing, which was a wave, you know, over the past 30 years, in some places is starting to be dismantled because it's become really obvious that what it's done is fill the prisons with people who, you know, giving them very long sentences when the root issue of why they came in contact with the criminal justice in the first place is something that's much better addressed in a community setting than in the prison.
Now, what about this issue of race and class affecting sentencing? I mean, we have cases like Martha Stewart. We have cases like Little Kim. I mean, you know, we have, those are two different ends of the spectrum. But based on the statistics, African American women are in the jail being sentenced higher than Hispanic, and Hispanic more than white. But I think all of you touched, well, Sarah and Alfreda touched on the issue of education, which definitely affects, in a lot of cases in America, your class, unless you were born into a wealthy family. So how can people in the community, you know, I guess in minority communities, Latino communities, African-American communities, how can people in the communities on the block, how can they help the situation? I mean, should they be going into elementary schools, talking to young girls? Is it high school? I mean, where do you begin with trying to stop women on a road to prison? Alfreda, do you want to speak to that issue?
Sure. Well, I'll start. The media has a very large role that they play. And when you see the Martha Stewarts and the Paris Hilton and Lil' Kim, sometimes it's almost glamorized that it's okay. Now, breaking the law, I'm not a person who's opposed to incarceration. I just feel that incarceration should fit the crime, and we don't need to put people in prison for long periods of time for check frauds and, you know, things like that. It should fit. But when the media kind of puts a spin on it sometimes, with young people nowadays, sometimes they look at it as a badge of honor. And we have to make sure that we are reporting the truth so that people can understand that there are consequences to the choices that they make. Another thing that FAM has done, and I applaud them, because they actually put a face to it, and then they put a story to it, which is the person's life and what has happened, but it's showing the over-glaring use of incarceration where we're just putting people away for too long a period of time, where the average person can look at the story and say, well, you know, that could have happened to me. I have many parents that come up to me and say, well, you know, my son was doing something, and you mean I could have gone to jail? Yes, that's the reality. We have to actually tell the truth about what is going on so that people understand it. I do think that people need to share more of their own stories, and you see more of that. We just put a report out in Baltimore called Bearing Witness, where folks who've been impacted by the criminal justice system have made recommendations to the criminal justice system. While it seems like a small thing, they're actually giving voice to the actual experience of incarceration, living on the other side of it, and they're finding that some of the recommendations are some of the same things that policymakers are saying.
Right. So that's an important issue, to show the young people that it's not a glamorous situation, even though the news is glamorizing. Well, yeah, Martha Stewart only went to jail for 5 months, and Lil' Kim only went, oh, you could do 1 year and a day, or T.I., I think he did 1 year or something. I mean, it makes it seem like it's so easy, but also these individuals, because of their class, because of their economic status, once they get out, they have a cushion and they have something to go back to, whereas the average individual doesn't have that. So let's talk a little bit about this recidivism rate. Maureen, in your dealings with staff, what are their comments? They're seeing the same faces over and over again?
Well, unfortunately, I think that's true. And I think that Alfreda, again, hit the nail on the head. We really need to understand who the women are, what the profile of women are that are going to prison. And again, I think that the media will take a couple cases and sort of glamorize it, or bring women to... It appears that women are going to prison in droves because they're more dangerous and more violent, and that's really just not true. What we're finding is that the profile of women in prison, again, are women who have a lack of education, lack of meaningful employment, living wage, just, and what oftentimes will happen is that as related to their drug use or related to, you know, some of the trauma they've experienced, they oftentimes will return to what are some default kinds of behaviors. And what we're finding is that the women that are coming in, oftentimes a high-risk woman looks very different than a high-risk man. So women who do come into the system, oftentimes because staff don't know how to appropriately deal with them, will oftentimes look at some of the behaviors, write women disciplinary reports, and it just puts them deeper and deeper and deeper into the system. So I think
what are some of the training that you provide to staff to help that, to help eliminate that, I guess, prejudice on the part of the staff, whether it's a male staff member or female staff member? I know you have different online trainings, you go into facilities. What are some of the things that you do with staff to help alleviate that?
We really try and get them to understand that women present themselves very differently than men. Women are relational. Women ask questions. Women often, when they're given an order, they will ask why, and oftentimes that's considered to be insubordination. So we find that just by being women, we often the criminal justice response will be a negative response, and it just drives us deeper and deeper into the system. So what we've really tried to do is create some training programs, create some tools that really look at what the issues are that bring women into criminal justice, that it's not necessarily that they're more dangerous or more risky, but that they have some issues in terms of their concern about their children and how they react on the unit. Oftentimes will get them into trouble with staff. So we really try and show that that women have different needs, they have different strengths than men do, and that systems that are built for men just don't work as effectively with women. So through programs, through different ways of classifying women, through creating treatment programs that really focus on the issues that are significant to women, like their trauma histories, like improving access to children, like helping them build positive networks for when they return to the community.
I want to touch on that issue of the children. In NPR, it was April 17th, just came out yesterday. In Ohio, inmate mothers care for babies in prison. At the Ohio Reformatory for Women, a dozen babies are spending time behind bars. This program is one of many across the country designed to meet the unique needs of mothers who are locked up. This is only available to nonviolent offenders who arrive at the prison pregnant or with infants and are serving relatively short sentences. This program, the Achieving Baby Care Success Program, began in June 2001. Currently, they have 12 mothers participating in the special wing of the prison. And the reason they're doing this is to reduce the issue of recidivism and to keep those connections, because that, again, touched on what Maureen talked about. Women are relational, trying to maintain relationships. And definitely, I think, one of the strongest relationships that women have is with their baby or child. Sarah, are you aware of this program, and are you guys with your organization, Women's Prison Association, doing anything to help women while they're in prison stay connected with their children?
Yes. I mean, the issue of what are sometimes called prison nurseries is one thing that we are taking a really close look at. We're actually, within the next month, about to release a national report about these programs that now occur in a handful of states across the country, and also looking at some community-based equivalent programs that allow women who come in to correctional supervision pregnant and then give birth to babies to be able to stay with them for a bit of time and really form that important bond. You know, and what we found is that the number of these programs are growing, and that there has been research that's shown that maintaining this connection early on does help women, reduce their rates of recidivism, so it makes them less likely to go back. You know, children are a really key part of this picture, because of the women in prison, as you said earlier, Joy, two-thirds are mothers. Of those two-thirds, 77% were the primary caretakers of their children before they went to prison. But once the mothers get to prison, they face a really hard road to maintain contact with their children, to maintain parental rights to their children. One big issue is geography. Women are often located at a prison that is you know, 100 miles away, or even, you know, if you're in the federal system, can be states away from where your child is, which makes visitation really difficult, and can make maintaining parental rights difficult.
Let me just interrupt you real quick, Sarah, for a second. Now, there's some people, and I'm just being devil's advocate here, will say, well, why should the child maintain relationship with this person who's in jail? Is that a good example for the child to see, to continue to see their mother while they're in jail because they committed a crime? What do you say to
that?
Yeah, sure. Alfreda, is that Alfreda?
I do. I run a parenting program inside of the Maryland Correctional Institute for Women. And part of that program is that I bring the children to see their moms, and that's getting the community involved. Churches volunteer and provide transportation, and we take the kids down the road, and they get a visit with their mom inside of the gym instead of in the visiting room, so that you don't have to sit in chairs. You get to run around. You get to braid hair and play basketball and do all of that. That comes from having an administration who's willing to look at some of the things, thinking out of the box and do things a little bit differently. So when I'm calling the caretakers to ask permission to take the children, I hear all of that. Well, I don't know that I want my grand to go see his mother in prison. You know, I don't know if that's healthy for the child. The fact remains that that's still the mom. And I don't care, you know, what the mom has done in a child's eye, that's my mother. I still want to be with my mother. Other family members sometimes will make statements that, you know, this is a financial burden and I'm taking on our responsibilities. And, you know, we say detrimental things to children that they hear, and we're still talking about their mom. So I try to explain to the guardian that it's not a normal visit where, you know, you're sitting side by side in a visiting room, but it really is a play atmosphere. And once you go through the metal detector, it's just a visit with mom. So we have to educate people as we go along. And they even have a baby bonding program there where if you come in pregnant or up until the child is 18 months, the family members can bring the baby to bond with the mother in a room that's specially designed for moms to bond. Now, just as Sarah was saying, one of the disadvantages is it's in the middle of the week. We can't get, you know, the family members aren't always able to get transportation to go the distance. And even the scheduling of the program, along with all of the other programs that are going on. So we've got to continue to retool things so that we do have a win-win situation where we're allowing children to be with their mom, especially during that critical time before they're two, when they really are able to recognize and know who mom is.
So what you're saying is basically that the focus needs to be on the children, and that we as adults should not be necessarily focusing on the adult that's in the prison, but focus on the benefits that this connection will bring to the children. And maybe perhaps this connection will actually stop the child from taking that same path that their parent did, because the parent can then explain to them, look, you know, I made this choice, I made that choice, and, you know, explain, this is where I am, and this is why I can't be with you every day. This is why I can't come see you play your basketball game, or I can't talk with your teacher about your report card because of the choices I made. So perhaps some people are saying this might not be good, but it is a positive thing.
Yes.
Let's talk about some other programs. I was reading there's a correctional facility in Alaska, and they hold the nation's only all-female prison orchestra. It's a 12-member group, and all of the musicians are serious felons, but they're learning how to play Mozart. Let's talk about some of the positive things that we're trying to provide, I guess, to society in prison in terms of rehabilitation. We talked about the children, we talked about music, exercise, health. Maureen, what are some things that you're finding that are on the horizon, maybe with this new administration? What are some things that they're going to try to offer this new administration to the prison system?
Well, at this point, it's a little too early to tell. But what I'm hopeful about is that my organization, National Institute of Corrections, we work with state and local jurisdictions around the country, and we get a number of requests from jurisdictions about creating assistance in creating nurseries or parenting programs. We get A real common request is that a lot of facilities around the country have begun to understand that women really do have unique needs and are really looking for us to work with them on looking at their current programming, whether it is gender responsive and begins to target some of the unique issues that women bring. And there's a couple of facilities around the country that have really begun to look at the types of programs that they offer for women. And actually creating units or facilities that are really based on the needs of women as opposed to the needs of men. And some of the anecdotal information coming out of those facilities is that there are fewer behavior problems, women are more engaged in treatment, there's more support in terms of preparing women for reentry when they return to the community. So I think that that's a very positive thing. I know that, I was just recently at the facility where Alfreda does some work, and they have a program where the women serving life sentences actually have been working with an acting coach and doing some significant things, and they just recently put on a play that was very, very powerful. So
Thank
I think
you.
That it was fabulous.
Alfreda, do you want to,
yeah,
say something about
the play is Faces, and the lifers actually share their experiences, what led them to prison, what life was like before prison, and their remorse, how they feel about the crimes that they have committed. Of course, being lifers, they can't come into the community to do that play, but
right.
we're bringing youth groups, and it's actually an opportunity for prevention, which is a word we don't hear too much anymore, to try and allow young people to see choices, where choices can lead them, and how people feel who are serving life sentences.
Alfreda, is there a number people can call if they're interested in trying to hook up their organization or their youth group with you to see this presentation?
Sure. My number is 410-233-3385, and Monday through Friday, 9 to 5. If I could go back to some of the programs you're talking about, and it's nice that, you know, people can connect to music and do Mozart and all of that, but looking at the statistics of the women who are going to prison, the lack of education, their inability to find jobs, and how reentry needs to work so that we can cut back on the recidivism rate and keep the crime rate low, we need to look at what people's needs are. And we really need to have more effective substance abuse treatment programs inside of prisons that are connecting people to aftercare so that when they are released, they're not tempted to go back to the same lifestyle. Most people release to the same neighborhoods with the same problems. So we really need to learn how to combat some of that.
Well, that's what your organization and Sarah's organization are really at the head of, is trying to help women once they get out. Sarah, let's talk a little bit about some of your programs that you have for reentry up in New York.
Sure. Well, my organization, the Women's Prison Association, we've actually been around, if you can believe it, for 165 years. We were founded by abolitionist Quakers in the 1840s. And that whole time have been working to help women who've been involved in the criminal justice system. So the work that we do now spans the entire spectrum of women's involvement in the criminal justice system. We do work in the community running an alternative to incarceration program. We help women while they're inside prison and jail. We help them prepare for their release so that we can make that transition as smooth as possible. And then
now,
when women get out...
Mm-hmm. Are you also connecting, Alfreda mentioned about the substance abuse problem, and that's a serious issue, and also the health issues that people find out that they're dealing with. Is that something that WPA can help them connect after they get out of jail?
Absolutely. I mean, when women get out and they come to us or they call us, we help them look at a whole range of issues that they're facing, including connecting them to substance abuse treatment, connecting them to healthcare resources, helping them find employment and further their educations, and helping them reconnect to children and family. And most women, and housing, of course, is probably the biggest and most immediate need for most women when they come out. And most women are facing some combination of those issues, and it gets pretty complex when those issues intersect with one another. So we really work with women on our service side one-on-one to help them determine what are the goals that they want for themselves and their families when they get out, and then help them take the steps they need to achieve that.
What's your phone number at your organization, WPA? Can you let the audience know that?
Sure. Our phone number is 646-336-6100, and I would encourage interested audience members to go to our website, which is www.wpaonline.org, and you can sign up for our email news alerts and watch our website. We put a lot of publications up there. And within the coming weeks, actually in partnership with the National Institute of Corrections, we're going to be launching a national online database of programs and services across the country that help women in prison and after prison. So that will be a free national resource that anyone in the country with internet access can log on and find help wherever they are.
I want to repeat your address again, www.wpaonline.org. And Maureen, your website is www.nicic.org, correct, Maureen?
That's correct. And
is there a phone number that someone can call also to get some information from your group?
Absolutely. 1-800-995-6423.
And Alfreda, I just want to repeat your phone number again and also your website.
Okay, it's 410-233-3385, and the website is www.nwpp-inc.com.
Now, Alfreda, now, once the women get out, I mean, you were in prison. What's the first thing that you would suggest for someone to do when they get out? Who should they call? Where should they go? Or even maybe before they even get out, if they know they're getting out, what's some of the first couple steps they should take?
I definitely would not wait until I got out. I would start connecting to the community and find out what kind of community-based organizations or even faith-based organizations that are out there that actually assist folks with trying to reconnect in the community. Most people think that a job is the number one thing that people need, but people come out actually needing a review of life skills, how to shake hands, look people in the eye, give them direct contact when you are communicating with them, how to fill out job applications. Many people already know that, and for those, certainly not a repeat. You know, some places you go to, you have to go through a job training program. Some people don't need to do it. So I'd say individualize everyone's plan of moving forward. I call it a plan of success. After that, certainly housing is very high on the list. If a person comes home and has nowhere to live, what's the point of getting them a job? And what's the point of getting them a job if they need drug treatment? And your money's going to be the trigger to have you get out there and use, and then you're not going to be good to yourself, family, or the community. Mm-hmm. So you have to really allow each person to be in that driver's seat. Some programs look at previously incarcerated people as babies. You know, I need to plan your life for you. But we're talking about adults who may need a hand up, but they may need to be pointed in the right direction, but people ultimately make their own choices of what they
now
need to do. They know what they need.
Right. Now, Alfredo, you and I were talking offline, and we mentioned briefly before the show started, the issue of time management.
Yes.
And how sometimes that's a difficulty because while you're in prison, and maybe if you've been there for a long time, everything's very regimented. Once you get out, trying to have to think about, okay, I got to go here, I got to go there, I got to be there at 9, 10, 11. What are some things that people can do to help with that issue of time management, which I guess is really more of a psychological issue because and a power issue because you gave up a lot of your power while being in prison over to someone else who is planning and organizing your life for you, and now you have the power once you're out to try to do something.
And I'd really love to give that back over to Sarah because I was online, and kudos to WPA because you actually put out absolutely great research and reports, and it's so gender-based and so right on. But I was actually looking online and looking because I work with many women who come home, and I never really thought about allowing them to do a daily journal so that they can actually look at time is now in your hands and you are the master over what you do with your time. So, Sarah, if you would...
Yeah,
I mean, I think, Joy, you were right on when you connected it to power, because when women come out, they suddenly have this enormous power in some ways to shape their daily schedules. And, time is a really precious resource when you're looking for a job or when you're looking for housing and when you just get out of prison. And for women, they're being asked to juggle a lot. They have to make that appointment at the parole office. They have to go to the child welfare office to see the case manager. They have to make time to look for jobs. They, often feel like they have to be in many places at once. So what we looked at is how women and case managers and service providers who are working with women can help women, take control of their time, design schedules for themselves that they need so that they can get their skills met and, their needs met and increase their, ability to gain employment and stay on track during this critical time of reentry.
Maureen, we only have a couple minutes left. I want to ask if you could speak to the issue of recidivism. What are some things from your perspective and from the staff side that you deal with the staff that can help women not go back to prison? Is it the issue of making sure they have housing, making sure they're reconnected and developing relationships again, the issues of drug treatment? What are some of the things that you're hearing from the staff side to say, this is what they should be doing so they don't have to come back here?
Well, I think what's more important is to hear that information from the women, that the women need to be very clear. And the staff need to listen to what the women think that they need to help them be successful when they go into the community. So I think what our role is not only to listen to the women, but to begin working with women from the moment they enter the facility, because the vast majority of women will be returning to the community. So rather than waiting, for a month before they're going to be released, I think it's our responsibility to really begin working with the woman, helping her identify what her needs are, help her work with her strengths, and create opportunities for women to be able to connect to not only positive resources in the community, but also help them build networks, positive networks, that they can rely upon past government services when they're released. So I think organizations like WPA, like the organization that Alfreda is with, I think that those resources are important. But more importantly, I think that correction staff, correction systems, really need to avail themselves to working with community resources, to listening to the voices of the women, to not only look at the risk or the deficits that women bring into the system, but really work with their strengths. Because what we're finding is that when you give people opportunities and you support them, that it's amazing what we as human beings can accomplish.
The power that we have as individuals, I think, is great. I just want to thank you. We have only a couple minutes left, and I want to thank all three of the women this morning for joining me. I want to reiterate their phone numbers and their online addresses for Alfreda's group, the National Women's Prison Project, www.nwpp-inc.org. For Maureen Buell, for Maureen, it's www.nicic.org, correct?
Yes, and I would just add at the end of the org, /women offenders, and that will bring you to a specific page on women offender issues.
Okay, and then for Sarah, it's www.wpaonline.org, and that's for the Women's Prison Association New York. I want to thank everyone for joining me this morning. I want to thank the people on the chat screen, people listening on their computers. If you have any questions or concerns or comments, you want to email me, SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@hotmail.com. Again, that's SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@hotmail.com. Please check in with me next Saturday, April 25th at 11 a.m. Eastern. We're going to be talking about lupus. Lupus is a very difficult disease. It affects the immune system. And I'm going to have the Lupus Research Institute and the Lupus Foundation on next week to discuss how you can manage living with lupus and the treatments that are on the horizon. Again, thank you, ladies, for joining me this morning. I hope everyone has a wonderful day, and I will see you next week, Saturday mornings with Joy Keys. Please feel free to call in. Our call-in number is 646-929-0368. And again, you can email me Saturdays with joykeys@hotmail.com if you have any questions or suggestions about things you'd like to hear on the show. Thank you very much, ladies, for joining me this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you for sharing about the issue.
Oh, no problem. Thank you, and I will talk to you soon. Have a wonderful day.
All right. Bye-bye.